हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adhikarna 1 Description of the Form of Bhagavan. Okay, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur summarizes the various erroneous arguments put by the Advaitins and the causes behind them in Tattva Vivek as follows. Advaitavad has two types, Mayavad and Vivartavad. According to Mayavad, the world is absolutely false. There is only a perception of the world due to illusion. According to Vivartavad, the creation as a real event is accepted to some small degree. Creation is of two varieties, vikara and vivarta. When a perceived object changes its nature, but is accepted as true, that is called vikara, or transformation. For instance, the true substance, milk, transforms into another true substance, yogurt. When a perception arises which is not true, it is called vivarta. For instance, to perceive a snake when only a rope exists, or to perceive silver when only a seashell exists, is vivarta, illusion. There are many varieties of mayavad and vivarta, such as jivavad, but they all agree on some basic principles. So, the basic principles. One, there is no substance except Brahman. What is perceived is not true. It is conditional perception or conditional reality. Two, there is no individual soul. It exists only as a transformation of Brahman, or illusion. Three, the world is false. Four, when the soul gives up his false identity, he becomes Brahman. Five, liberation from illusion is the final goal. Six, Brahman is without qualities or energies. So, these are the basis that they function on, and because of that, then you get all the weird philosophies, right? Because if you start with this, then there's something wrong, you're going to end up with something strange. Right? So makes sense. Right? Srila Prabhupada is explaining in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya that the Lord being one, there's one subject, but depending upon how you're approaching, then you'll get three different realizations. Right? So if you're approaching through knowledge, then you'll get an understanding of Brahman. If you're approaching through yoga, then you'll get an understanding of Paramatma. If you're understanding through bhakti, then you'll get an understanding of Bhagavan. So, since they're basing their whole thing simply on knowledge, they cannot understand past Brahman. That's all. Because there's no bhakti included. Only Brahman, no soul. When a person says anything contrary to normal perception, if he cannot prove it, he will be considered mad. Common sense tells us that the world is real. The self is infinitesimal, but real. There is a creator, maintainer, and protector who can propose that individuals do not exist and everything they perceive has no existence. Right? Then what's the whole point? But that within them is a substance, by taking shelter of which they will understand the illusory nature of their perception. But an individual who is illusory himself make such a proposal, that proposal and all his other proposals are also false, right? Because we're saying it's all there, but the thing is there's a conditioned state. Therefore, you take shelter of the super soul, then you'll start to understand all this. But if we go by their philosophy, that if you're saying nothing is real, nothing exists and all that, then just they're speaking that philosophy and the philosophy itself doesn't exist, according to them. So then what's the point? Right. So what it is they're presenting something bogus, and then on their own philosophy, that bogusness is bogus also. But by other standards, it's considered good. So they're taking advantage of other standards to prop up their own bogusness. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, an irreligious person wants something done, but how they're behaving is badly and all that, so naturally someone else would react in a bad way. Right? So then they start preaching religiousness to that person. Right? And so if the person accepts that religious position, then they'll be more easier to manipulate. Right? Even though they don't believe in it, but they know the other person does. So he'll be good because he believes in that. You understand? So that's what the Mayavadis do. They don't believe in anything, but they know other people do. You know, they'll say, oh, that's a lower level, and they take advantage of that lower level to establish their own philosophy. Because otherwise, if they went on, it's all real, it doesn't matter, and there's no point of discussing or this and that, how many Mayavadis would there be? No. So they only have a following simply because they are very comfortable to work within the illusion, even though it has no benefit according to them. So, yes.
And this is what Hiranyakashipu did to his family members.
Yes.
When Hiranyaksha died.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So because, you know, they'll accept that, and then, because he just wants a peaceful house. Right? You know, that's all. He wants a peaceful house. So, therefore, by bringing up these philosophies, then, you know, it's there. So they know all these things, but they just, there's no realization due to lack of bhakti.
Right.
Yes.
But can we also call it niti?
Call it?
Niti. Because he wanted peaceful house, so whatever works, he takes.
Yes, yes. But Guru's pointing out it's the same principle. It's niti. So therefore, but the thing is in there, he's not saying that he doesn't exist and enjoyment exists. But here they're saying the soul doesn't exist. The creation doesn't exist. Nothing exists. There's only Brahman. So if that's the case, everything, either whatever's there is already Brahman. Or if it's not, it's an illusion. There's nothing there. All there is Brahman. So they as an individual speaking all these things has no meaning because they don't exist. So you can turn it the other way. Is that you don't exist, so why are you talking? You know, you don't exist, this creation doesn't exist, there's only Brahman, so therefore why are you even speaking? You know? Yes.
Don't you actually say that by knowledge people can realize Brahman?
Means they're trying to understand the absolute truth. It's not just by knowledge. It means trying to understand, approach the absolute truth through the path of knowledge. They can understand Brahman.
It's only attempt, not realization.
How much Brahman can you realize if you don't accept the person that the Brahman's coming from? You know, it's just like how much do you appreciate the light in the room? Let's say we see the light through here. And we do a whole study on the light and the angles and all these different things and lights move like this and that. But we don't accept the light bulbs. You know, so how much realization about light do we actually have? So it's like I said before, it's vague.
Which type of knowledge it must be? It must be only Vedic knowledge or it can be some philosophy?
Look, it's the path of knowledge, means the path of jnana. Like you have karma, you know, karma and jnana. Mm-hmm. So therefore, being situated on that Vijnanamoy platform, then you are trying to simply understand the absolute truth through that position. Right? Through knowledge. So then you can only appreciate up to Brahman realization. You can't get past that. So that's why that here, that's all they have. Scholars all relate to that. Like, you know, in the educational institutions around the world, if they're going to study Indian philosophy, they always study Mayavad. Because as jnanis, you know, they're not very good jnanis in the way of they're not understanding the Vedic literature and the practices. But they're working in the intellectual plane, so the maximum they can understand is that. So that's why they relate to Shankara. But if you look at it, you know, then Ramanujacharya has defeated his philosophy. So if they were actually intellectual, they actually scholars and logical, then they would be using Ramanuja or Madhva. But they're not. They're using Shankara. Because it's just that's all the more they can relate to. They can't relate to personal.
I want to understand question. Here, Jiva Goswami defeats the philosophy of Shankara because Shankara tried to connect impersonal philosophy and put it on the basis of Vedas, which is fully theistic.
Yes.
But if you will take just impersonalism in other countries, in Greek philosophy or in Chinese philosophy, is it possible to defeat it without basis of theistic scripture, just by logic? Or by logic it's not possible?
They're only using logic, so why can't you defeat it with logic? Means they don't have anything else other than logic.
They have only. I mean, can we, by using logic, defeat their philosophy? Because
can you defeat fire with fire? You sure? When there's a big forest fire, they start another fire, and then the two come together, and that goes out. No, you don't know that. Oh. Yeah.
In America, they use it a lot.
Yeah. Oh, they don't use it anywhere else?
Not really.
Maybe there's not as much space. So you just get an area. It means the fire's over here. You can't control it there. So then the place where it's not, they'll clear one path. So the fire can't get back that. But the point is that then the difficulty comes is if the fire comes up to there, it could cross. So they so far they're going the other way. So then the two fires meet, and now there's nothing to burn. It goes out. So that's the meaning of fighting fire with fire. So it's just, you can, but then you have to be good at logistics and that. But the point is we're discussing it based on the principle of the absolute truth, or on the complete truth connected with Bhagavan, right? So since that is there, you can understand these other two levels. So anything that they'll say will only be on those two levels. They can't get above those two. You understand? So then you can always discuss that because you're using a framework that is based on theism. It's not just logic. But your presentation, the medium you're using is logic. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it can be. You know, then it's just a matter of that confidence and these kinds of things. Because otherwise they're, depending on who they are, they have such attitude. They're so confident. Right? Like that, so that they really think that they know what they're talking about. But the problem is unless that is their major, then they don't have any right to, I mean, as a personal individual, they can talk about it, but then they have to be very confident that they as an individual are very qualified. Because as a PhD, if that's not their major, they're totally unqualified. I mean totally. I mean absolutely totally unqualified to talk on anything other than their major. Right? But because we accept that they in the same way, the common person, oh, PhD, oh, they're smart, they take advantage of that. You know, it's the same principle. Same principle. So therefore, they're not smart in everything. They're smart in their own area. And in anything else, that means they're clever in that way, and so maybe more clever than others. So in one sense, it may be easy for them to kind of figure things out, right? Because Prabhupada does mention a Brahmin can learn anything, teach anything. But the point is according to their own etiquette, they're not allowed. So therefore, it's not their business. You know, if it's just somebody knows something and talks that, then you discuss. Because where is it going to come from? Where's the origin of it? Does that make sense?
I asked because you said recently that we can understand the truth only by the approach of revelation, not by logic.
Yes, that's the only way you can understand it.
It means that if they will not have some of the secrets,
they won't understand it. No, they can't. That's why then when we talk, we'll use the Vedanta philosophy. Then they get contact with devotional service. But if we just use logic to discuss logic, then what benefit are we giving them? Right? Right. Unless that's impossible to talk, so you just give him prasad. Yes.
Like you were mentioning, I guess it was about a month ago, sometimes we start with that, the logic to bring him to a certain point, but then we bring him to the...
Yes.
The inductive to the deductive.
You understand? Prabhu was saying you start with that inductive aspect from their position to try to elevate it up until they can appreciate the deductive.
Madhvacharya, he met the greatest logician of the time, and Buddhists are known for logic. And he came to Tibet with Madhvacharya thinking that he's like, no, I'll defeat him and I'll increase one more, you know, degree to my this way.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes and meets Madhvacharya, and then they sit. Madhvacharya says that, okay, you want to discuss absolute truth with logic? By using logic, I can prove and disprove anything and everything. So how can you understand something which is above a normal perception and realization
mm-hmm.
by using this logic?
Mm-hmm.
Debate ended. He left.
He left, yeah. So that you have to bring that point out at some point. There's something beyond. Does that make sense? You know. Otherwise, their whole life is not logical. You know. So much of their life doesn't make any sense. So why would they be doing that?
When they separate the two.
Well, they try to avoid, because if you get into all these other things, then it won't work very well.
I mean, they separate their own life and their...
Yes, that's what I'm saying. They separate the two. But if you point it out, then why are you doing all this? You know, they're having the job, all these things, to maintain their life. And so their life, is that working according to logic? No, so then... But, okay. Who can propose that individuals do not exist, that everything they perceive has no existence, but that within them is a substance by taking shelter of which they will understand the illusory nature of the perception? If an individual whose illusory self makes such a proposal, that proposal and all his other proposals are also false. Drunkards often make such claims, thinking themselves kings and acting accordingly. Undoubtedly, they also think they are God. There are various types of error, but the main ones are those caused by erroneous logic, mental aberration, and intoxication. By erroneous logic, man's intelligence can generate the worst mistakes. The pantheists of Europe are of this sort. Spinoza was the perfection of such thought. The theosophist philosophy, which is spread in America and elsewhere, is also a Advaitavad. Whatever opinions the learned scholars propound, the common people with no discrimination generally accept. In India, Dattatreya, Ashtavakra, and Shankara have in different ages spread the same thought in slightly different forms. In modern times, other than Vaishnavism, everything is along Advaitavad lines. Almost all the Brahmana families hold this view. The reason for such popularity is that any mistaken process in the world can take shelter of a Advaitavad and thus not get destroyed. Right? So it's just because nothing exists, it's all illusion, so therefore anything can take shelter in it. Right? So that's why it's very, very popular. Because it doesn't have to actually have any basis. Anyone who wants to worship an animal as God can take advantage of Advaita philosophy, because it's all one. In order to justify the process, they will quote Advaitavad, which says that by concentrating on the animal as God, eventually the heart will become purified and steady. Then the mind can engage itself in the non-dual substance. Because of such practical usage, everyone takes Advaitavad as their savior. However, they do not investigate the basic faults of the philosophy. Those who take Bhaktivad as their life and soul, with proper discrimination, take leave of Advaitavad and cultivate the natural path of Bhakti. Because if it's all one, it doesn't matter what you do. So any philosophy works. It can all take shelter of that one thing. But as Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed out, they don't really investigate the details of this. Right. And so therefore they don't understand the weakness.
Yeah. One of the Alvas, he was like, you know, kind of Advaitavad before his title. I think it's called Bhaktisar.
Bhakti?
Bhaktisar.
Bhaktisar.
So then, in order to turn him into a devotee, another Alvar, he was, when he was moving, he was great scholar of the time. When he was moving around, he makes a pot with all the holes and he puts the seed on the top of the soil in an inverted way and he starts watering it. And this Bhaktisar, while going, he happens to see that and he was moved and he's doing something very stupid. Then he asked him, oh, he looks an old man and then looks like a saint, so why are you doing this? He asked him. He says, that's what I'm trying to teach you, that's what you are doing all your life till now. He immediately understands what he's saying. He accepts him as guru. And
okay, then, what are we on now? This is the...
It's still talking about that, right?
This is Jiva Goswami's next, defeating the next point on the philosophy.
It's going, keeps going, guys.
Here.
Okay, so we'll continue with the Sarvasambhadi. Okay. Eternal knowledge is the cause of all manifestations, since such knowledge cannot be measured, not being accessible by other means of knowledge, and since it should not be merely perceived of void, not being touched by any inferior substance, Shakti naturally should exist by the proof of the remainder. With faith in its existence by discrimination, it should be uncovered in the state of liberation. This is the conclusion by logic, footnote 17. Brahman is the cause of all manifestations. There can't be any external... is this insentient?
Insentient.
Insentient agent who can have access to it. Hence, Brahman should have an intrinsic Shakti by which all effects such as the creation are produced. This Shakti, though inconceivable to material senses, could be revealed at the liberated state. Right, so if we're so everything that is there, knowledge is required because knowledge being applied gets results, right? The transformations. So that means then these things, that potencies and that, they're beyond. If we're talking about on the level of Brahman, they're beyond the material intelligence because the material energy and all that is what is dealing with the material mind and all these facts. So then to be able to understand what's beyond means that it has to be inconceivable. You can't use another brand of kind of knowledge to get this one knowledge, right? It's a mistake. Let's say I know cooking doesn't mean I know anything about, let's say, motors. Right? I can say, well, I'm very knowledgeable, I'm the best, I have this and that. It doesn't mean that you know any of this. So that's the whole thing. If it doesn't work anywhere here, why would it work in the spiritual? Right? So the point is that it being beyond, so then if Brahman is there and we have this world here, so that means if you remove Brahman from the equation, you move what's here from the equation, you and the jiva, you have to have Shakti left. Otherwise, how is it functional? Shakti doesn't happen from nothing. Right? So potency has to be there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then one would have to understand that then when you come to the liberated platform, then you'll appreciate this transcendental Shakti. But on the material platform, yes, you can't understand it. So they actually have to take up a transcendental position. But unfortunately, if they don't take up bhakti, they're not actually situated on the transcendental position. So they can't understand it. Other objects by such shakti become different objects. One should not worry that there will be contrary action in Brahman, producing change where there should be no change, since the manifested object reveals itself. Right? Brahman doesn't have to change. Brahman is there. Brahman has the shakti. By the shakti, one object turns into another. But Brahman hasn't changed in that process. Right? It's just the source of the shakti that's doing that. Right? Does that make sense? So when an object manifests, it reveals itself. You don't have to have Brahman to come in and say that this is here.
When they say Brahman doesn't change, they mean that he doesn't decay, doesn't degrade.
Yeah, like that. Any of these things. So then, ultimately, they're even saying these things that you're saying about Brahman are also not real. Right? It means you understand that at the second level of consciousness. You know? But then on the third level, the highest level, then there's just nothingness. So, you know, that's... It doesn't... The fault in Kaivalya, impersonal liberation, is as follows. Impersonalists claim that the existence of bliss is simply a manifestation of pure, unlimited bliss. Because that bliss does not manifest to itself, it is ultimately insentient like the senses which receive sense objects. Because of the non-existence of anything else, there is absence of manifestation to others as well as to the self. And consequently, it is completely void, something which is not even aware of itself. No one would be inclined to attain such a goal. Even the Advaitavadis accept scriptures which describe Brahman endowed with the Sarup as a goal. By accepting this statement of Shruti, the Sarup Shakti must be accepted. Right? Because you're saying is that they want Brahmananda. But then the point of Brahmananda means it has to be something that's perceived. And then the point is Brahman is not perceiving anything because there's no object. So the Ananda of Brahman, so the so-called as they describe, would not be available to Brahman. So if they become Brahman, then this Ananda would not be existing. Because then to exist, for you to experience it, there has to be transformation. Right? You have to transform your consciousness from one of non-blissful to blissful. What is doing that? A potency is doing that. Right? So there has to be an object on which to apply it, you know, on our miserable condition. Then you transform it into a blissful condition. But since those things don't exist, there is no object, there's no soul, there's no emotions, there's no feelings. So how would this bliss be experienced? It's impossible. So even they're saying that the Brahman has a Sarup as a goal. So therefore, if there's Sarup, that means there must be a Shakti. You know, because they're taking a form of Brahman. They're saying it's nothing. So otherwise, if it's completely nothing, then it's just Buddhism. So what's the difference? And Buddhists don't talk about Brahman. They just talk about everything going out. It's so miserable, you just get rid of the misery. They don't even talk about being happy. They just want to get rid of the misery. Right? The Mayavadis talk about Brahmananda. Viti, having proved that Shakti can't be an imposition on Brahman, Srila Jiva Goswami further elaborates on the subject. How Brahman and his Shaktis can coexist, or how can Brahman and his Shaktis coexist together? Probably go with the first one. First, he emphasizes that Brahman, without qualities, doesn't exist at all. So now here's then the doubt, Purva Paksha. Since Brahman is self-manifesting, why does it need Shakti to manifest it? Right? But if you're manifesting, that means there's a transformation from a non-manifest to a manifest. Right? Uttara, you are simply enamored by words, right? If it just sounds good, that's the point of logic. People get enamored by the words. Like we're asking, how do they get into these things? They're enamored by the words. you know, the specific word, the concept of the word, the grammar of the word, or just how nicely it all fits together. You know, it's just like, let's say, I don't know if you had the experience, that sometimes you have, like, let's say, architects, that they'll come up with some concept. You know, oh yes, we'll just make everything, you know, straight lines. And then they'll try to fit everything into that, even though it doesn't work. You know, it can be a major theme, but they'll use it on everything. So they're enamored by this concept of, oh, I've come up with this, that's the uniqueness, it's all in straight lines. Does that make sense? So then that's the same way as they get bewildered by words. Yes.
And mainly, like Prabhupada also uses that, Shankara used word jugglery.
Yes. I mean,
and among the whole aspects of logic, the chala, which yes. actually is the one which they use the most, because all the concepts are there, then you remove the one which is at the down and put it up and then move the everything up and down, and then yeah. you can prove what you want.
Yeah, you prove whatever you want, and that's the thing about it. You can move anything anywhere, so that's why any philosophy can take shelter of it. So that's why then Prabhupada's, you know, you never say shunya, but it's just all impersonalism. Yeah. Yeah, very good. So that makes sense. Yeah. Since Brahman is self-manifesting, it will shine forth. That is what we call Surup Shakti. It is natural to say this, right? So that's how do you perceive it? It's because of the Shakti. Without manifestation to itself or others, an object cannot be called self-manifesting, right? Because if it's not manifesting to itself or to anyone else, how can you say it's manifesting, right? Because it doesn't exist to manifest to. And nothing else exists for it to manifest to. So how can you say it's manifesting? If it depends on something else, it cannot fulfill its definition. However, manifestation becomes impossible to take place for those advocating pure manifestation of Brahman with no qualities. Manifestation makes the Brahman qualified by action for itself and others. That is, so if there is manifestation, means then Brahman can appreciate and others can appreciate. That is the quality of an object. An object which with qualities is unconscious like a pot, since it lacks both aspects for self and others. Can Brahman have the ability to exist without these two aspects? No, that ability is its potency. Since Brahman is endowed with the quality of potency, the proposal of Brahman with no qualities must be given up. In that philosophy, the faults embodied in this basic concepts must be eradicated. But, so therefore, to be able to appreciate, there must be a potency. Otherwise, what's connecting? Srivastava says, the proponents of Nirvishesha cannot say, this is a proof for the object with no qualities, since the subject of all proofs must be an object with qualities. You say, you can't say that this is the proof for the object with no qualities, right? Because for it to be proven, then there must be since I say you want to apply that knowledge on something, so that means it must be an object. And to be able to perceive that object, there must be qualities. So even to perceive Brahman, which is saying, has no qualities, right? There must be qualities to perceive it.
The quality is defined as the unique aspect of an object
yes.
by which it is made different from others.
It's different from others. Yeah, so if Brahman is different from others, then it must be there. So that's the visesha. Yeah. So, right? It has to have existence, it has to have visesha, it has to have something that it can accomplish, you know, a purpose, and then some potency to be able to do that. That makes something an object. So if they're focusing on Brahman, then it must be an object, so it must have all four of these qualities. Otherwise, then they can't focus on it. You know, like you said, it's not unique from anything else. If you consider that making Nirvishesha Brahman subject to proof to be temporary, this leads to the temporariness of Brahman itself. Right? So if you can't prove it, then why are we even discussing it? Ramanujacharya says, if you say that nirvisesha is proved by realization, that claim is refuted since that particular experience, necessarily endowed with qualities, is witnessed by the Atma, Sri Bhashya. Right? So you're saying is that it's by realization, but realization of who? Of the Atma. Right? And so the experience means there's qualities that you're perceiving. Right? So that means then there must be something else. Right? Because they're trying to say is that if you try to prove it, it shows the temporariness. So it'll just be by realization. Say, you can't prove it, but you'll understand by realization. It's the same thing. It's just by changing the words. That's the thing, they're enamored by words. Because I use this word, now you're supposed to say. You know, it's like in the modern thing. If I bring up some politically correct thing, you know, if someone's the victim, as soon as the victim point comes out, everybody's supposed to stand back in awe. But it's just, you're bewildered by these words that says you've claimed it is. But then how? You know? Like this. Certainly. Moreover, by making Brahman subject to arguments, it means it is endowed with qualities. It is a substance like a pot. Brahman with no qualities is non-existent, like the horns of a rabbit, since it can never be proven. Okay. I think they haven't met Monty Python. Yes? Yeah. So that's the thing, is that if you can argue about it, that Brahman is, that means there's qualities that you're arguing on. Sri Bhashya also says, an object with qualities allows that object to be defined by qualities denoted by words. Since that is the function of words in a sentence. A meaningful word results by the combination of affixes and roots. Production of a particular meaning of a word cannot be avoided by the combination of affixes and roots. A particular combination produces a particular meaning. By producing a particular statement through combinations of such affixes and roots in a sentence, Shabda does not prove Brahman with no qualities, since it is possible to delineate an object with no qualities. If it has no quality, you can't talk about it. Right? So if we say nirvisesh, then that means that visesha means that it has some special uniqueness. Nirvisesh, without any special uniqueness. But that itself is a quality. And so we're defining it according to qualities with words. And they're quite comfortable to use their logic and their words. But at the same time say, oh, it's beyond all this, and you can't describe it by words. But then why are they describing? Why are they talking? So that's the difficulty, is that they're quite happy to talk on something they say you can't talk about.
It's interesting to see how, like, there is a science in the whole language itself, that you can, through the language itself, you can prove all the philosophical points. Mm.
Yes, because it comes from Krishna. Narayanad udbhuto yam varna kramaha. That all the varnas, everything's come from Krishna. Then these varnas all have meaning and all that. So that's why, because it's come from Krishna, it has potency. Right? So that's the whole point. They want to avoid potency. But the point is Shakti-man, it means there's Shakti. It's the source of everything. Everything's Brahman, but everything's kind of, that means there must be energy. So they're accepting the one, but not the other. It's like saying, yes, there's a generator, but there's no electricity. You know, then why do you use the term generator? Thus it is proved that Brahman has qualities. That quality is its Shakti. Right? So the qualities are the Shakti. Without a trace of Shakti, an object cannot be understood. This nature of the supreme entity is proved by all experience. So unless there's potency, how do you understand something? There's a potency that it does something. That's how you perceive it. You're perceiving it as something. Priti. Next, Srila Jiva Goswami explains the non-difference of the Lord and his Shaktis by illustrating the concepts of Shaktiman and Shakti. Shruti also defines realization of Kevala as follows. Brahma va idam agra asit tad atmanam eva avet aham brahmasmi. Brahman existed in the beginning. One should know that Atma. I am that Brahman. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 1.4.10.
So Maharaj says exist, it doesn't say manifest.
Yes. Yeah. Exist in the beginning, one should know that I am. One should know that Atma. I am that Brahman. Yeah. And the fun part is we're using, this is where they get their point from Aham Brahmasmi, and we're using that against it. Like you see is that in the earlier cantos, Prabhupada's using the Sarvidam Kalvam Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma to defeat, you know, about how the Maya body is saying this and defeats that. But we see when he gets into the ninth canto and tenth canto, now he's using it to establish the transcendental reality. So he quotes it actually more in the ninth and tenth cantos than probably in the whole rest of the Bhagavatam. But now it's in line with what Krishna is telling, you know, the gopis, how he is everything. He's pervading everything. You can know him through everything. Like that. The seeing capacity of the seer is not lost since it is indestructible. There's no second object. What is seen to be separate is not something else. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.3.23. The Lord is both knowledge itself and qualified with knowledge. Like a snake and its coils, because scriptures say the Lord is both. Brahma Sutra 3.2.27. We explain this sutra according to what Madhva says. Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Brahman is infinity, existence, and knowledge. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.2. Yes Sarvagya. Brahman is omniscient. Mundaka Upanishad 1.1.9. Esha Evatma Paramananda. Brahman is supreme bliss. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad. Anandam Brahmano Vidvan. One knows the bliss of Brahman. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.4. According to these statements, Brahman is both knowledge and knowing, bliss and blissful. Ubhaya vyapadeshata. The word two in the sutra indicates that Shruti is the proof. Because of teaching of difference, blissful, and non-difference, bliss, in Brahman, ubhaya vyapadeshata. Brahman can be compared to the snake and its coil. There is no difference between the snake and its coil, and also difference of the snake by its length. As far as blissful, that means there's a difference. They're experiencing the bliss, that's the oneness. Praka sha shravad tad no va tejasvat. Because Brahman is knowing itself, it can also be defined as the shelter of knowledge. Brahma Sutra 3.2.28. Because it can know itself. But they're saying there's no object. So he can't know it. So he doesn't know himself, doesn't know anything. So then somehow or another, why do you want to become this? Right? Purvavad va. Or the dual nature of the Lord can be compared to time, which is essentially one, but has past, present, future. Oh, commentary. Commenting on this, Shankara says, Brahman is understood to be the shelter of knowledge. Prakasharayad vad. For instance, the light of the sun is not extremely different from its shelter, or source, the sun, since both are filled with light, but they are designated as being different. Similarly, Brahman is knowledge and the shelter of knowledge. Right? So he says all these things, he says the correct philosophies, and then he'll say these things to bewilder. You know, so he's already defeated his philosophy within his philosophy. But because they're enamored by word, they don't see. Purvavadva. Or the dual nature of the Lord can compare to time, which is essentially one but has past, present, future. Brahma Sutra 3.2.29. So you call it time. It's one thing, but it has these features. So he is knowledge, he is the knower of that knowledge. He is the shelter of that knowledge. The word uttara, latter, in Svatmana Chotarayo, Brahma Sutra 2320, refers to things which appear later. Similarly, Purvavat in the sutra means that which appeared previously, time. Though Brahman has as its natural manifestation, it must have Shakti to manifest itself and others, whose nature is knowledge and bliss. Possessing Shakti, which causes its own and others' knowledge and bliss. So, if he is knowledge and bliss, then he must have a Shakti that manifests his and manifests it to others, that others can then appreciate it. Right? And then they, by appreciating that, they will themselves, that gives them existence and gives them bliss. One knows oneself by nature. That is a manifestation to oneself. It is not for others. In that sense, it is not like light, which is only for others but cannot reveal itself to itself. Having established the Lord and his qualities in Sutra 3230, this is proved by scripture in the next sutra. Pratisay dach cha. The Lord and his qualities are not different because difference is rejected by scripture. Brahma Sutra 3231. One cannot say that omniscient and other qualities are another entity, since it is said, neha nanasti kinchana. There is no variety at all in Brahman. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.19. So that means there's no variety, it's non-different. But at the same time, as it can be perceived, that means there's Shaktis. So that means the Lord and his Shaktis are non-different. Natasya karayam karanam cha vidyate, natat samas cha pyadikas cha drishyate, parashya shaktir vividhaiva shruyate, swabhaviki jnana bala kriya cha. He has no body and no senses. No one is equal to him or higher. His supreme power is manifold. His actions are naturally revealed with knowledge and strength. Svetasvatara Upanishad. The word cha in the sutra indicates that ignorance is excluded from the Lord's qualities, and that knowledge and other qualities are inherent shaktis of the Sarup. Yeah, I think it's in, maybe it's in the explanation of the Atmarama verse. Is there a cha in Atmarama verse? Yeah, Atmarama's cha. So then Prabhupada's pointing out, Lord Chaitanya says there's 11 meanings of something to cha. And depending on how you use it, it gives a completely different context to what you're discussing. So that's why you see, we just think of cha and, okay, big deal. Why are they? Because it has so many different ways it can be. It influences the point. So that's what I say. The word cha in that sutra indicates that ignorance is excluded from the Lord's qualities, and that knowledge and other qualities are inherent shaktis of his swarup. Right. So in here, they're there. So and that means these other ones are not. They're not included. Thus, Sridhar Swami commenting on Tvam Arka Drik Sarva Drisham Samikshana, Srimad Bhagavatam 8:24-5. In the verses praising Matsya says, quote, the Lord has spontaneous knowledge, dhrik, like the light of the sun, arka. Thus he is the revealer, samikshana, of the senses, sarva drishtam. Yeah, that's this is where that dhrik drishya vichar comes from. It means that he naturally has spontaneous knowledge, knows all things, sees all things, and reveals, you know, to others. So we say, I'm seeing this. No, it means the Lord had already seen this. He's revealing this to you. You know, you're going through the process by which that can be seen. And so then he reveals it. So whatever it is, it's going. So this is going on at every moment. But for him, it is. It's spontaneous. It's not a difficulty for him. He doesn't have to work at it. So every morning, you're looking here, one direction, you look the other direction. But it's the Lord's revealing what you're seeing in any of these. So he doesn't have problem. Ramanujacharya says, quote, "The Lord, who is the sarup of knowledge, has a sarup of being the knower, just like a jewel, the sun, or a lamp." Sribasya. In commenting on Ikshater, isn't it Ikshater Na Shabdam? We are missing a Na.
Ashabdam is used.
But the verse is Ikshater Na Shabdam. Ikshater Na Shabdam. Gonas Chan Nat Na Shabdam.
Ashabdam also gives the same meaning.
Okay.
It's given Ashabdam, not Ikshater Shabdam.
Okay.
That's all.
Commenting on Ikshater Ashabdam, Shankara criticizes Shankya philosophy. Brahman cannot be related to material bodies since he exists previously to the bodies as the glancer, Ikshate. Brahman is not to be criticized, for, like the light of the sun, Brahman is eternally knowledged by its sarup, and thus does not make an effort to produce knowledge. Right? The sun doesn't have to make an effort for things to be revealed. The knowledge of jivas in samsara depends on the body. The Lord, however, is devoid of material senses, which obstruct knowledge. The two verses, Natasya Karyam and Apani Padaha, Svetashvatara Upanishad 6.8 and 3.19, show that the Lord's knowledge does not depend on a body and remains uncovered. Right, so it's not dependent because it's his shaktis, and so he manifests. So he, his form is there, it's the source of all these things. So he doesn't, it's not depending upon having a body that's different from himself, since his body and him are non-different, his energies are non-different. So he is knowledge, he is who reveals knowledge. Someone may object that since Brahman is eternally knowledge, it should not be taught that it knows things and can still be called independent, since knowing objects depends on other objects. That is not so. The continuous manifestation of heat in the sun burns and gives illumination. It is termed independent. In commenting on Brahma Sutra 2.1.18, in refuting Eka Vijnana Vada, Shankara shows that consciousness is the witness. Therefore, there is one entity, and it possesses Shakti to know without giving up its sarup. Right? So consciousness is the witness, and Brahman is consciousness. So therefore, he is able to, and through his Shakti, he can know without giving up his position, because the Shakti and him are not different. He also says, quote, that Shakti of the Supreme Lord is pure consciousness. It is real and superior. Matter is the Shakti of the Lord called ignorance. By combination of the two Shaktis of the Lord, the world arises. The Lord's Chit Shakti is separate from that Shakti and its transformations. Right? So this is all Shankara. Right? So that's the fun part. So the Acharyas go in out of his own commentaries, take those things that actually support the actual thing, and then use those to defeat the Lord. There is the following verse. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Kshetra Gyakyam Tata Para Avidya Karma Samgyanya Tritiya Shaktir Ishyate. Vishnu has his spiritual Shakti, the Jiva Shakti, and the third Shakti, Achit Shakti, called Avidya Karma. Vishnu Purana 6761. Sridhar Swami comments. The Shakti of Vishnu arises from his sarup. It is the superior Shakti. It is called the supreme tattva, the supreme Brahman, and the highest form. Previously in the Vishnu Purana, his sarup was explained. Pratyastamita vedam natat sata matram. That sarup is existence alone with no difference. Vishnu Purana 6.7.53. However, this form is described with the word Shakti when it's about to produce effects. Right? So, you say sarup, so it'll be his form. right? But when it's about to produce some effect, then you call it Shakti. Right? You're only distinguished. One entity, it means this, it's himself. But because now there's going to produce a transformation, then you call it Shakti. So it's not different from him. But at the same time is that there's that ability to transform, and he doesn't transform, it means there's a non-difference. I mean, there's a difference. But at the same time, since it is him through Shakti that's transforming, there's a non-difference. So that's the... So does that make sense? So then when you say Swarup Shakti, then that means that form of that Shakti, which then is non-different from his Swarup, but at the same time is causing all transformations. They'll do that the same time as you see that it'll be established that with the correct understanding, and then they'll get bewildered by then applying it in this way. So that's the thing, they're starting with correct ingredients and then getting bewildered and doing something stupid. So they're given all the correct ingredients, but then they put it together in strange ways. Yes.
All right, so what would be the difference between Krishna's energies and his qualities?
They're the same. Because it's the transformation of the qualities that makes the variety. I mean, it's like you say, attraction then turns into attachment. Then attachment turns into bewilderment. You know, Gita is explaining. So it's all non-different. It's just that when you're talking qualities, then you're talking about a specific nature of a particular thing. When you say Shakti, it means the energy in general. You know, unless you have a particular name. You know, Maya Shakti or Chit Shakti, Achit Shakti, Jiva Shakti. And then the Swarup means his form, because everything's coming from his form. Right? But the whole point is that aspect of transformation, that means there's a difference. But at the same time, there's a non-difference. That's the whole point, is that they go together. So what I can say is it's not logical, but at the same time one has to appreciate that the Supreme being beyond the senses is inconceivable. So then, therefore, this has been described by the Lord and others in the scriptures. So this is what's happening. So when one comes to that liberated platform, then you can appreciate that. But if you're simply going to go, it can't be that by my conditioned logic, then you're not actually discussing transcendence. I'm discussing my conditioned concept of transcendence. That's the weakness. So,
because all these points are more substantiated to explain this concept, because more difficulty comes to accept when the medium-sized form or form of Krishna is the omniscient and all-pervasive. So first, if this is established, that how everything is transcendental, then it goes to the personal aspect.
Yeah, then you get the Paramatma, then you get the Bhagavan. So naturally it goes through those levels. Yeah, because the first one's easy. Everybody will accept that, and less will accept the second one, than very few will accept the third. Where are we?
Last line.
Thus Shakti is not?
Yes.
Thus Shakti is not independent in manifestation, but manifest when the Lord's Swarup becomes inclined to act. Right? So when his form, he wants to act, then the Shakti is manifested. So the Shakti is not independent. Because otherwise then in the Mayavad, the Shakti is independent because it's not non-different from the Lord but coming from the Lord. Therefore, it's an independent entity. You know, that's creating all these different things, creating the Jivas, creating Ishwara, all these different things. Or, you know, somehow or another coming from where, creating the Jiva, and the Jiva, then by that concept, then that now combined with that now creates Ishwara. You know, so it's just, you know, whatever is there. Whatever mood they do. Or it's created Ishwara who now is dreaming and now is creating the Jivas. Right, so the Jiva creates the knowledge by which is Ishwara, and that one Jiva, the Ishwara, now is in that dreaming state, now is then producing all the whole creation. So it just, that's the infinite regression. It's just, it doesn't, one illusion is based on the other illusion. So, the Lord is the possessor of Shakti. When effects are produced, it is called Shakti. The universe is rooted in the Lord's ability to produce effects. That ability to produce effects is eternal and is called Shakti. There is no difference of Shakti from the Lord since it cannot be distinguished as extremely separate. Right? Means that's the thing, is their exclusive oneness creates exclusive difference. Right? But the point is it's one and different. So that their philosophy has a problem because it's extreme. So we can understand it's dualistic, even though they claim to be monistic, they're actually dualistic because their monism is exclusive, but then their dualism is also exclusive. Right? So there is no monism in this. You know, this. So.
Sorry. Actually, the Rasa Tattva mentioned that the Rasavas comes into picture only because the impurity of the heart.
Mm.
And all the impurities of heart, however they are manifested as a philosophy, are what is discussed now. And then when we understand all the detailed aspects of it, then, like, you know, the ultimate goal, which is to experience that bliss, can be appreciated more like that.
I didn't catch.
Rupa Goswami makes a statement that rasavas happens because there is an impurity in heart.
Mm.
If there is no impurity, then whatever the pure devotee is doing, there is never a question of rasavas.
Mm-hmm.
But because those impurities, because of those impurities, how they are manifest, we generally don't understand. But here, when we discuss the philosophy, we understand that they are manifest in different forms of impersonalistic philosophies. And those doubts and everything are removed, and then...
Then it all goes away. That's because the thing is, Vaidhi is there because we don't know how to act. So we're given guidelines on what you should do. Then spontaneous means now you understand, appreciate what to do, what's the move, what you're trying to gain, and so then you can naturally deal with that. So the point is that when it's actually based in the proper understanding, by improper association, then it doesn't leave the actual proper path. But the anarthas then are going to be in these different categories. Right? For instance, you know, that'll be of offenses, that'll be their improper practice of bhakti. What are the other two? Yeah, attachment to the material phenomena. And yeah, I'm not remembering before. But the so as we give those up, then these things naturally come into play. Because otherwise we're just going by what makes sense to us rather than following the path of bhakti. See, the thing is, because if it's about us, then we'll make mistakes. Right? If it's about bhakti following that path, then we just follow what is there. So then there won't be a problem. So it's not a matter of, it's not our, it means we're perceiving, but it's not about our perception. It's about we're perceiving what is being already perceived, right? What you're saying about the drik. The Lord is perceiving. That means then then his internal potency, which is non-difference, is also perceiving. But he's perceiving, you know, in the existence of it, and the energy is perceiving in how to bring about, how to take that existence and activities to produce an effect that will bring pleasure to Krishna. Right? So he's existing in Satchidananda. Right? But then when there's transformations, that's the Shakti. Right? And so then the Shakti making these transformations, then that's already being seen by Krishna and his Shakti. Now those who have that proper attitude, following in the footsteps of the Acharyas, then you can see that path of that movement. Right? And so it's not about us, it's about serving what's there. You know, so this idea is, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, that's for Sahajiyas. It's about, you know, then we see the Acharyas talk about that they would like to do these services that others are doing. So whenever they're there, they'll take part in them. But it's not like, well, now I'm going to go do this, now I'm going to do that. What if that's not needed now? You know, so it's whatever's needed. So you're following an already existing path that's being seen by Krishna and his Sarup Shakti. And then we can take part in that. You know? And since those, they know how to follow that path, like Rupa Goswami knows how to follow, therefore we're Rupa Nugas. And the Acharyas know how to follow Rupa, and Srila Prabhupada knows how to follow the Acharyas, so therefore that's how then we follow. Then we'll be on that path. And then we'll experience what they're experiencing. So it's not that it's any different. It's not that, oh, but so many steps back, I'll experience less. That's the meaning, point of the transparent Vaya Media. Is that, you know, it's exactly the same. Whatever experience at the front is experienced at the back. It's one thing, because it's all Krishna. So why wouldn't it be one thing? So if we're identifying with serving Krishna, we're connected to Krishna, why wouldn't we experience the same thing? But to experience, we have to be a different entity. But at the same time, is we're not different than Krishna, so therefore that's why we can experience. But only when we're in line with Krishna as a person. So, makes some sense? Yeah. They say the Vedantic view of Dasanu Das. There is no difference of Shakti from the Lord, since it cannot be distinguished as extremely separate. Vedantas do not accept that the Lord is without Shakti. It is opposed to logic, since one sees that mantras have Shakti to cause paralysis, etc. There is a difference, since it is impossible to think of Shakti as completely non-different from Brahma's Swarup, right? So you can't think that it's extremely separate, at the same time as you can't see that it's completely non-different, right? So that's the... There is perception of non-difference, since it is impossible to think of Shakti as separate. Thus, Shakti and Shaktiman are accepted as different and non-different. They are inconceivable. So that's the point. So Achinta Veda Veda Tattva takes care of all others. It's very easy to deal with. Srila Prabhupada elaborates the non-difference of Shakti and Shaktiman in the following. So we should understand this. That after the appearance of this body, soul, this so-called big name, big fame, important body has no value. Or after the disappearance of the body. Soul, this sort of thing. And what is that soul? That soul is part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, we are energy of Krishna. So when the energy is withdrawn, or Krishna is not there, the energy, Krishna's energy, and Krishna is not different. Shakti, Shaktiman are abheda. just like the sun. The sun is the Shaktiman, energetic, and the sunshine is the energy. So long the sunshine is there, the sun is there. There's no difficulty. When the sun is not there, the sun's energy is also not there. Similarly, Krishna, right, just like the sun is there, the sunshine is there. And then at night after the sunset, then the sun's not there, the sunshine's not there. There are two things, are always. The Mayavadi philosophers, they do not accept the energy. Simply they accept the energetic impersonal. No, we must accept the energy and the energetic. Both Shakti Parinama. Both. Shakti Parinama. Shakti. Shakti means energy. By the energy, everything is going on. The energetic is aloof, just like the sun. We can very easily understand. The example is just before us. The sun is there, the sunshine is there, and within the sun globe there is sun God. But we, so-called scientists, we are studying the sun from 93 millions of miles away. And we are taking every pride that we are studying the sun. You have studied the sun, why don't you go there? Go there and enter into the sun planet. This is a material thing. And what to speak of the spiritual thing, right? So even on the material thing, it's so much difficult. So why would the spiritual? Why would you be able to approach with your intelligence? Lecture Srimad Bhagavatam 1838, Los Angeles, April 30th, 1973. O Guru, I have understood thoroughly that the Lord has four forms, that he has three Shaktis, and there are three ways of meditating on him. Vishnu Purana 6, 8, 7. That'll be explained now? Oh, okay. Well, basically it means the four forms. It means depending on what it is, you have the Chaturvyuha. He has the three Shaktis, internal, external, and marginal. And there are three ways of meditating on him, right? Through knowledge, through yoga, and through bhakti. Does that make sense? Yeah. In Maitreya's explanation above, in order to avoid the fault of repetition, there is compact expression of the Lord's possessing and not possessing Shakti, since by mentioning the four types of forms, he indicates the one Sarup of the Lord. Right? Four forms, but one Sarup. There is the following verse, because it's always one, but there's difference. Does that make sense? It's just like you're meditating on one entity, but depending upon how you're approaching, you're getting three different results. So one is only understanding Brahman aspect, one is understanding up to Paramatma, and one is understanding up to Bhagavan. So, yeah. There's the following verse. Jnana vijnana nidhaye brahmane nanta shaktaye agunad ya vikaraya namaste prakritaya cha. Obeisances under the form of knowledge and specialized knowledge, unto Brahman, unto the possessor of unlimited energies, unto the unchangeable Lord, devoid of gunas, unto the instigator of Prakriti, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.16.40. Because right. Brahman means Krishna. Right? We're used to it that Brahman means Brahma Jyoti. No, Brahman means Krishna. And if you approach through knowledge, you can only understand the Brahma Jyoti aspect. Right? So just like those who approach in devotion understand all three. Mm-hmm. Right? But he's Brahman. Right? So, yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.